Chapter 17. Rouge. Once again, Zoe found herself hustling home. For one thing, spending any extra time in a place where Ms. McMaybe McKiller could find her was now more than a little creepy. Mostly though, Aspen had a definite track record of running off to do his own thing without her. Which he totally shouldn't be able to do. It was her quest. Darn semi-sapient NPC. This time, however, she had a decent amount of money burning a digital hole in her bank app. She'd been putting half of every paycheck into her advanced education fund, which was one of her dad's conditions before he let her take a full-time summer job, but the other half had been accumulating. She only made minimum wage, but it was still way more money than she'd ever had before, and for once, she was going to use it. Pulling up her rideshare app, she saw that a car was heading from the Veritas building to a grocery store just a few blocks from her house. Probably someone who lived in the same area, grabbing something for dinner tonight. Bonus, because that sounded like a brilliant idea. She was pretty sure the only thing they had in the house was leftovers of her dad's eggplant parmigiana, and while it was awesome the first night, it just didn't reheat well. Quickly, Zoe geotagged herself as an additional rider, and while she waited for the car to show up, she sent a message to her dad. At Redzi, hey dad, I'm catching a ride home in a lime green Tesla with sunflower decor. I'll snap a pic of the driver when it gets here. My geotracker is on, and I'm going to grab dinner on the way. See you soon. There was no immediate reply, which made sense, since her dad was having office hours now. She glanced around and saw the distinctive car heading her direction. She waved, and the car pulled up beside her. She discreetly snapped a photo of the inside of the vehicle as she slid into the seat beside the only other occupant, sending it off to her dad with a subtle swipe of her thumb. That done, she looked up, smiling brightly at the driver, who was a fairly nondescript guy of Asian descent with some kind of bird shaved onto the sides of his head. He nodded at her, checking his app. Zoe Williams? As if she could be anyone else, since the app sent her photo to him when she reserved the car. Yep. She shot him a thumbs up, then quickly approved the transaction he sent her to cover the fare. It would hold the funds until they both agreed that the service had been performed as requested, and if there was any dispute, it would continue to hold the money until they worked it out. "Rockin'," he said, then turned back to the console, resting his hands on the biometric sensors built into the steering wheel so the car would start moving. The car was fully automatic, but legally the driver had to be holding the wheel and watching the road whenever the car was in motion. Once the man's grip and gaze were registered by the car's assistive intelligence, they smoothly slid into traffic. Zoe turned her gaze to the other passenger, who was sitting in the back seat beside her, assessing whether he was going to be a chatty companion or a silent one. When she first looked at him, he was gazing at her with something almost like astonishment and recognition, but he quickly lowered his lids, sliding his eyes away with a speed that was almost rude. "Hi," she said brightly. "Thanks for sharing your ride." He grunted, and she sighed internally. It was going to be one of those rides. She didn't mind not talking to people on the bus, since just people watching was usually plenty of entertainment. In the closed environs of a car, however, silence quickly grew awkward, if not oppressive, and from the way the driver was bobbing his head, he seemed to be in his own world listening to music, so he wasn't going to be much help. This ride was awkward until it became oppressive. It was nearly a 40-minute ride home in rush hour traffic, and Zoe spent most of the time on her screen, watching 4D Kitten as she described the unctuous flavor of her duck ravioli and raved about the truffle foam. O.M.G. After the third time she caught her co-passenger surreptitiously trying to see what she was watching, she pulled out her knockoff Valpak glasses and set her screen to shift frequency to match. The next time rude dude tried to see her screen, she had to suppress a grin at his look of frustration. By the time they reached their destination, however, Nina's conspiracy theory-driven paranoia was fueling a full-blown delusion that somehow this guy was stalking her, even though she was the one who had picked this car to go home in. For a man who was clearly completely uninterested in conversation, he was definitely spending far too much time shooting glances at her, which led to her shooting surreptitious glances back at him. The guy was tall and slim, almost bony, but with a slight belly that spoke of a disinterest in food rather than a penchant for physical fitness. His eyes were dark with an epicanthic fold, but his skin was pale as non-fat milk, and his tightly curled hair was a blonde almost as light as Jace's. His nose was broad with a short bridge, and his lips were soft and wide. He could just think she was cute, but first, you, and second, he didn't give off that kind of vibe. He was probably in his mid-20s, which meant he should just see her as a kid. He also wasn't giving her any little smiles, trying to edge in her direction, or attempting to reopen communication, which was what all the romantic leads in her books would try to do. When the car stopped at the grocery store, Zoe had long since decided that she wasn't walking home until this creep was gone, and there was no way he could follow her. Thankfully, however, the moment he finished unfolding his gaunt, stoop-shouldered frame from the small car, he strode away deeper into the parking lot, rather than heading into the store. This was a mega retailer, so it was entirely possible that he just used the huge lot as some place to leave his own vehicle. In any case, he was gone. Sighing in relief, she turned back to offer the driver a smile and a thank you, only to find him watching the retreating figure with as much distaste as she felt. She quickly pulled up the rideshare app and dropped a 20% tip on the transaction, smiling when his screen chimed. The driver checked it, then gave her a grin. "Hey, thanks, Zoe. Anytime you need a ride, you let me know. Handles Jackie Chan." She laughed. "Sounds good. I don't know, though. That guy was kind of disturbing. Is he a regular?" She flashed a "I'm just a kid and need protecting" smile at him, and he sighed. "Yeah, he's out there every weekday. Catches a ride on the regular. Not always me, but my buddy Arnie gets him a lot too. Never talks, never tips, always something about him that just makes your skin crawl, but if I reject his rides without a reason, the app dings my ratings." Zoe tried to look disappointed. "Yeah, I think I'd rather take the bus." Then she brightened. "Does he always go to this store?" Jackie shrugged. "Usually, but sometimes he goes to those blockhouses on 17th and Pine. I saw an old lady meet him once, so I think he lives with his mom or something." She smiled. "Great. I'll just skip any days I see you heading here or there then." She tugged at a curl. "Do you think he works at Veritas? I'm just an intern, but I don't remember seeing him there." The young man's screen pinged and he shrugged, looking down at it as he accepted a new fare. "Yeah, he just started a few weeks ago. Maybe a month. At least, that's when he started catching rides." He put his hands on the wheel, shooting her a final absent smile. "Nice to meet you, Zoe. Look me or Arnie Schwartz up next time you need a lift. Have a great day." She backed up as the car started rolling, looking around to make sure Spider Boy wasn't anywhere close by. Seeing no familiar faces, she headed into the store for a take-and-bake pizza. When she got home a half hour later, she was greeted at the door by a frantically excited Max, who looked as happy to see her pizza as he was to see her. Laughing, she put the pizza down on the counter and turned on the oven, then flopped Max's ears and played good boy with him until the oven dinged. Quickly, she stuffed the pizza, vegetarian of course because Dad, into the oven, set a timer on her screen and headed for the backyard. Max raced ahead of her, dashing out the dog door as soon as the door recognized his microchip and opened. They spent 20 happy minutes playing together in the back, interrupted only twice. First, her dad sent a message indicating that he'd be home late thanks to long pre-finals office hours, so good job heading home alone. Next, the house system let her know her pizza was done, and she had to dash inside to take it out and put it on the counter to cool. Max was just starting to calm down from the excitement of one of his humans arriving home, when her screen chimed with a message from Jace. "At Jaceco, they're on the move." Given the time lapse between game time and real time, even with the smart programming editing out the boring parts, they probably finished dinner 15 or 20 minutes ago. "They're somewhere near the docks now. Myrna just logged off at an inn down there. At Redzi, sounds like this is it. I'm going to cram some pizza and then get in my pod. I'll watch her stream until it cuts and then log in. You coming?" "At Jaceco, any more people going to explode?" "Totally not because of my playing." "At Redzi, implode. I can't make any promises. At JSCO, think I'll sit this one out. That last session made me rethink some of my life choices. I'll log in and do some leveling. Your quests are just going to get me killed. Again. At Redzi, fair enough. I'll help as soon as I get some free time. At JSCO, ha. Huh? I'll believe it when I see it. At Redzi, lol fair. Zoe stuffed a slice of pizza down even as she climbed into her bodysuit. She was glad her dad wasn't there to see her, since he'd be badgering her about grease on the suit, as well as not taking food upstairs. Poor Max laid down sadly as soon as he saw her pull out the suit, and she gave him half of her second slice as a peace offering. I'm sorry, bud, she murmured, patting the dog's silky ears as he wolfed down the treat. This'll be over soon, I swear. Thinking about the note Nina had shown her, she swallowed hard, then forced a smile. Just not on September 12th, right? The chocolate lab looked up and whined pathetically, eyebrows twitching as he glanced between her and the slice of pizza sitting on her bedside table. She sighed and tore the crust off, tossing it to him. You only love me for my food anyway. Max woofed reproachfully, then went and laid down on the floor at the foot of the pod, clearly indicating that he would be patiently waiting for her when she emerged again. She crouched down and gave him a hug, then stood and climbed into the pod. Lying down, she pulled the headset on, futilely attempting to get it to sit as comfortably on her head as the one at work did. When it was as good as it was going to get, she laid back and said, "Show Veritas livestream, 4D kitten." Between one blink and the next, her vision filled with a view of Veritas online, only this time from someone else's perspective. She was looking at a gamer with the tag Pentakitten, level 32, friend, floating over her head. Clearly 4D Kitten wasn't interested in the life simulation aspect of WoW, and kept things like gamer tags on. NPCs walking by had generic tags over their heads as well. Dock worker was repeated several times, along with a few sailors and even a captain. As soon as a player actually interacted with the NPCs, the tag would shift to their name and possibly their level, if it was lower than the player's, but before that it was pretty basic. It wasn't always accurate either. For example, Zoe's buddy Gunthrax was tagged as a mercenary, and you wouldn't know he was a thief unless you caught him in the act. All of it was just too busy and too distracting for Zoe, so she always left the tags off. Besides, the game was made to be as immersive as possible, and even warned you against things like turning the tags onto always visible, because it was against the spirit of the game. 4D Kitten was obviously a rebel. In any case, the girl was rambling about something, so Zoe tuned in. Have a super cool quest tonight. Those of you who are in the gibberish religion probably know, but this is so big, I think it's tied to a new world event. Yeah, that's right, you heard it here first. I'll put some more deets in the chat, but this whole thing is supposed to be super secret. I'm going to cut out here as soon as we pull on our cloaks because it won't let me live stream this quest, but trust me, as soon as it's done, I'm going to be the first one to post the videos. I've been editing them since I realized what a big deal this is, so you should follow me if you're not already, so you're in on it as soon as the vids drop. As she spoke, the girl was glancing between a large warehouse beside the dock and her friend, Pentakitten, who would wave and smile alluringly. Zoe assumed that was what that was supposed to be, every time she realized she was in the shot. Probably had her notifications set to let her know any time she was being recorded or streamed, so she could try to do something interesting and get followers herself. 4D Kitten held up something that looked like a basic black cloak. Zoe suspected that the same system that traded generic chars for the avatars of players who didn't want their every move plastered all over a million wannabes, random streams, was working here too. She was willing to bet one of Millie's cinnamon rolls that what the other girl was actually holding was a hood similar to the one that had belonged to the deceased Leonard. Okay, I'm going in now. We're a little early, but I don't want to miss anything. Don't forget, you saw it here first. Follow me for more. Then the stream switched to a cheesy logo of a tabby kitten playing with a 4 and a D. Okay, fine, the logo was kind of cute, but Zoe wasn't ready to admit that. Allie, which was the name Zoe had given her interface instead of Emily, send Jace a message. Message starts. Oh my gosh, that was so lame. I'm logging on though, and I'll head for the docks. There was a ship named Lady of the Water nearby, so I'm going to start looking for that. Later. End message. Taking a deep breath, she braced herself for the drop. Allie, start Veritas Online. Rouge blinked, wondering why it was so dark. Even if Aspen had left her in a dark room, her dark vision should allow her to. Oh wait. Huffing in amused irritation, she pulled the square of silky fabric off her head, then tucked it into her inventory just to show Aspen what happened when he covered her up. Plus, it was purple and pretty. As soon as she oriented herself, finding that she was still standing in Aspen's sanctum sanctorum, she threw open the door, slammed it shut behind her, and raced for the kitchen. Even though her stats hadn't changed since she'd logged in at work, the tiny lag in response time between this pod and the one at work meant she still felt the slightest bit off, every time she went to jump and push off a wall as she rounded a corner, or leapt up to swing from a handy chandelier. The experimental pod really made her feel like this was just as much her real body as the one she was in, as she played with Max and hugged her dad before bed. As amazing as her home pod had always seemed before, she still couldn't help feeling a small twinge of regret that she wasn't in the other one. By the time she reached the kitchen though, dropping into stealth, just for the fun of it as she snuck through the door, she'd once again gotten used to the slight hesitation, the feeling of being wrapped in something that kept her from moving as freely as she should be able to. When she entered, slipping through the partially open door so smoothly that it barely moved at all, she saw that Aspen had once again gathered the whole crew, except for Vaughn, who was conspicuously absent. Even Mai Li was there, and Rouge came to a full stop when she saw the avatar that the AI had created. Who was in there? Emily? Amy? Something else entirely? Then Aspen picked a carrot up from his plate, flicking it toward where she was standing, and she saw a notification a moment later. You have taken 1 point of damage from carrot. Your stealth has been broken. Rouge rubbed the spot between her eyes where the carrot had struck, glaring at Aspen, who was unsuccessfully trying to hide one of his half-smiles. Then a small puff of wings and fur struck her, and she jumped in surprise before instinctively reaching up to cup Silas in her hands. Rouge. Aspen called everybody here, and he says we're going on a quest. A real grown-up quest with plans and sneaking and everything. And you and I get to go together. The little bat's squeaky voice was practically inaudible with excitement, and Rouge laughed as she stroked the so petable silver tufts in front of her ears. He does, huh? Sounds like Aspen has things all figured out. Rouge tried to arch an eyebrow at Aspen, but felt both go up instead, so she was sure she looked more surprised than skeptical. Aspen tugged at his hat, his grin just getting bigger, as everyone around them let out various versions of greetings and their own versions of what Silas had just said. Struthio, standing by the stove holding a platter onto which his wife was piling steaming roasted vegetables, was the only one who didn't say anything, though his broad smile let her know he was glad to see her too. Millie immediately clucked and sent the tall man toward the servant's stairs, presumably to deliver the platter to the children. As soon as he was on his way, she began putting together a fresh plate of what looked like roast beef and mashed potatoes. Mouth-watering, Zoe had to swallow hard before she could force herself to speak. No time for food, though that smells amazing, Millie. 4D Kitten just vanished, but she was at the docks putting on some kind of cloak when she did, so we're a go for the mission. She looked around at the small crowd. Ah, I think this many people would probably be a little conspicuous though. Aspen nodded, pushing himself to his feet. Rustor is here because he had something else to talk to me about. He Plum, Tomas. He paused to look meaningfully at the old man, who pinched his lips together stubbornly but nodded. Manuela, Tia, Struthio, and Millie will either be staying here or going about their own business. The rest of those named nodded with varying ranges of enthusiasm and continued eating, though they were all visibly curious about the goings-on. The farmer pointed at Tessel, who was caught mid-bite and flushed as she waved weakly. Tessel will be going with me to join Vaughn, who is watching the location, which we suspect is a point of contact for the maskers. We're going to check it out while you, Silas, Flu Flu, and Mai Li investigate this induction. You three, he indicated Rouge and Silas, then nodded to Flu Flu, who attempted a small bow while still stuffing her face, have some form of stealth, and my lay's knowledge of religion and gods may well prove invaluable. The priestess, one of the few who weren't eating as if they had a 10-mile-long tapeworm, nodded to Rouge, though her red and white painted face remained expressionless. Also, Aspen motioned to the plate of food that Millie, her face wreathed in smiles, pressed into Rouge's hands. You should eat. Never turn down a buff before a mission. Oh. Rouge flushed. She'd momentarily forgotten that food in the game was more than just delicious. It could also confer benefits far beyond nutrition. Manuela and Tia shuffled their chairs to the side, making room for Rouge to put her plate down. She was just looking for an extra chair when a knot in the floorboard below her sprouted up into a short, thick branch, grew one leaf, and then broke off with a crack of splitting wood. Manuela rolled her eyes, tilting her head toward Aspen. He's been showing off all night, the older woman said after swallowing quickly. You'd think there wasn't a house full of extra furniture around us. She shot a mocking glance at her old friend, who reddened slightly. Aspen rubbed the back of his neck. It just seemed easier than going looking for a chair, he mumbled. Plum was quick to speak up in his defense. To be honest, Lord Aspen, much of the best furniture was sold or taken away by the people who attempted to buy the manor. What's left is mostly upstairs for the children to use, and, she grimaced apologetically, it's not in the best of condition any longer. Sending a vindicated look at Manuela, Aspen nodded in acknowledgement of this information. Then he turned back to Rouge. Eat, then we'll be on our way. The food was as delicious as it looked, especially once Millie produced a thick brown gravy from a pot that had been simmering on the stove. Rouge wasn't usually much of a fan of gravy, but this was like a tiny blanket of savory richness that perfectly complemented the pillowy soft butter-filled potatoes. Once Rouge realized she was starting to sound like 4D kitten raving about duck confit, she just set to eating, and a few minutes later was gazing at her buffs in satisfaction. You have eaten an excellent meal. Due to both the skill of the chef and the quality of the ingredients, you have obtained the following buffs. Boosted recovery, you will regain health and mana at 1.5x the usual rate for the next 4 hours. Enlarge, for the next 5 hours you will count as a creature of the next size up for all offensive maneuvers. Basic haste, your movement speed will be 1.2x the usual for the next 5 hours. Just as she was pushing her stump back from the table, the back door flew open, and Lyric stepped in from the darkness outside. Rouge sent the mombele she had almost instinctively summoned back into her inventory, glaring at her friend, then the door. Doesn't anyone ever knock anymore? Lyric just waggled a hand at her as he bent over, hands on his knees, puffing as he tried to catch his breath. He seriously needed to level up and put some points into his physical stats, because he was a mess. I just ran here from the guild, he gasped out. I got a new buff, and I wanted to use it before you left. He looked up, smiling weakly as he waved to the crowd. Hello, way more people than I expected. His eyes sharpened as he zeroed in on the food with a teenage boy's single-minded focus on anything that could provide him with calories. What's that smell? Can I have some? Millie just laughed, face pink at the implied praise, a dimple appearing in her right cheek, and began preparing another plate. Once food was clearly on the way, Lyric turned back to Rouge and Aspen. I just learned a song that gives you a courage buff. It gives you an increase to saves against fear, shock and awe, and paralysis. Let me just play. The sound of multiple chairs pushing away from the table broke into his speech, as everyone who had heard or heard of his playing attempted to get up and leave at once. Lyric looked around, baffled, as Rouge and Aspen waved them back down. You mean a song on your marchunga, right, Lyric? Rouge asked pointedly, gesturing for him to come inside and close the door. Oh yeah, of course, Lyric said absently as he tugged the door closed, and thus fortunately missed the expressions of relief on the faces of nearly everyone else present. The young bard's instrument appeared in his hand, and he put it to his lips. He made a few test twangs, and then he was off into a simple but enthusiastic tune with a beat you could march or dance to. The bongs and twonks of the uncomplicated music made you smile even as your foot began to tap. You have heard an encouraging tune. You have now obtained the following buff. Courage, You gain a 5% increase in resistance to all fear, shock and awe, and paralysis debuffs for 2 hours. Rouge grinned. Sure, 5% wasn't much. But it was better than nothing, and most importantly, it showed that her friend was finally on the right track with his character. Lyric had actually been created a few months before Rouge, but had languished due to Jace's insistence on choosing Bard as his class. Rouge the Rogue, that's awesome. What level is it? Lyric, it's level 2. Level 1 was only a 2% buff, but I buffed random players all the way over here. I have 3 new friend requests. Law. Rouge the Rogue, you going to accept? Lyric, dunno. With all the weird stuff going on, I'm not sure I want to take the chance of ending up on the wrong side. Rouge the Rogue, we could totally use a spy on the inside. Lyric, no way. You know how I feel about being on the front lines. I like being a bard, because I can help people without anyone trying to kill me. Everybody takes out the healers first, but no one pays attention to bards. Rouge the Rogue, I know. Plus you can't join Chris Cult because you love Muse too much. Lyric, you know it? Best god ever. As soon as the song was done, everyone applauded, smiling. This was a new experience for Lyric, whose pale skin flushed beet red, though he gamely took a bow, sweeping his broad-brimmed feathered hat, which he refused to give up, though he had dyed it to a deep azure instead of its original violent red, in what he undoubtedly thought was a gallant fashion. Keeping an admirably straight face, Millie handed Lyric a plate heaped high with steaming meat, potatoes, and vegetables. Rouge stood and motioned for her friend to take her stump. Aspen clapped the young bard on the back, causing his blush to return full force. That was truly wonderful, Lyric. I look forward to hearing your future songs. Topaz's eyes glinting with humor met Rouge's own, and she could see that he had had the same thought she had. Especially since you can't sing while you play. Now, Aspen's voice grew serious, and he reached out and grabbed his way-too-cool stick with his way-too-cool tattooed hand, though the tattoos were now covered with a simple leather glove. The staff immediately grew short and thick, while its tinkling leaves swirled down into a solid metal cap with nothing more interesting than some faintly engraved swirls. Aspen stuck the thing, which now resembled a cudgel, into his belt. Let us go.